Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I have some secrets about artificial intelligence. We are talking with David Katz, CEO of Deep Surface AI, as well as Rahul Seth. He's a facial plastic surgeon. He's chief medical officer as well at Deep Surface AI. So, hey, guys.
Dr. K.
Hey.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks very much.
Wonderful to chat with you. I think I first ran into David at a meeting booth. Maybe that was at AAFPRS, American
That's right.
Academy of Facial Plastic Reconstructive Surgery. And I have been doing some lectures and panels and talking to our audience about artificial intelligence. You guys have come up with Deep Surface AI, really significant strides in the realm of using artificial intelligence for facial plastic surgery. Can you give me a synopsis of what this is and how I'm going to use it as a surgeon?
Sure. So what we have is some of your patients will know what morphing software is or simulation software, where working with a surgeon, the surgeon will take an image of a patient's face in 2D or 3D and then simulate procedure objectives on that model of the patient's face. So this is new in the sense that large parts of it are driven by statistical AI models to help guide the directions that the transformations go. And it will become increasingly that way over time as we continue to develop out features. Anything I missed, Rahul?
No, we're providing just large data-based information to help guide transformations really provide the patient and the surgeon a framework to work in.
So you guys are using these tools to quantify kind of biologic variations in facial structure and facial form. What does that look like? Is this machine learning that machines are scanning our faces and recognizing repetitive features and measurements, ratios, proportions, or angles? What exactly is the software doing?
Sure. So it starts with a training data set that we've licensed of about 1,000 faces in 3D. That's too small to do a lot of very heavy deep learning work or anything like that, but large enough to get a good statistical basis for how faces tend to differ from one another. The way we started in AI is with this project is probably the most straightforward one to think about. So one of Rahul's specialties is gender-affirming facial surgery, and the transformations from male to female, or female to male, are more subtle than sort of just thinking in standard linear measurements and angles would have you would lead you to think. And so working in the context of having a 3D statistical understanding of what those differences are in the forehead, in the nose, in the cheeks, and then being able to translate them onto a 3D model of a patient's face in a way that stays in the boundaries of where surgery focuses in that procedure is our objective, both in gender-affirming facial surgery and for all of the other procedures that are covered in the software, rhinoplasty, cheek and lip fillers, things like that.
Is this different from face tuning or the morphing technology that we already have? I think, you said our patients might be familiar with morphing. I think they're way more familiar with face tune, which we can tweak our appearance, images, and angles and bone structure. But how is this a different tool for a clinician? How would I use it? I'd scan someone's face and then do what?
Rahul, why don't you kind of walk through your process?
So basically, and then I'll let you talk about the differences between Facetune and what the software is allowing the provider to do and the major differences. But in my process, for using the software, I will take an image of somebody's 3D, take an image of somebody's face in 3D and be able to upload it on our cloud-based software. And then be able to have that software be able to give inputs or guided or functional ability to morph the face. And in other words, it provides a framework for us to be able to quite accurately morph a face in its most natural form, and gives you an output to share. That's how I'm currently using the software and kind of how we've designed it. Now, David, if you want to go about how and why we're different and more advanced than a Facetune or a filter.
Sure. And I want to kind of go back to how you started the question. So how is it used? How is it different from Facetune, right? There's sort of two concerns that typically come up as the most prominent concerns of patients considering a treatment or procedure, depending on where you catch them in their process, right? One is cost, and another is a fear of unnatural looks, right? And so in that sense, people would like to see before they do, right? And somebody else's before and afters can only tell you so much. So being able to have that visualization of the procedure on your own face can be extremely helpful. The example that always sort of comes up is patients who come in convinced that they need a rhinoplasty, their nose is terrible. And until they see on their face what the effect of a chin augmentation is, they can't realize that what they've been seeing as their, what they think of as the shortcoming of their attractiveness is actually kind of not the best solution to what their concerns are in some cases, right? In addition, there was a study done in the 2010s that shows that 95% of patients prefer to see these visualizations in 3D. They think 3D offers more than 2D. So there's two things when you're thinking about an application like Facetune that we're quite different from. And one is that there's nothing in Facetune's design that is built towards medically credible transformations, right? And so they're stunning. And I think Facetune is an amazing application, and it's been around for a while and it still seems like magic, but it's not medically directed. Whereas the design of our transformation tools are actually, they were built with surgeons, they were refined with surgeons, they are refined with surgeons all the time towards, this is the way I think about, this is the way I think about narrowing and widening the alar base, for instance, right? This is how I do a dorsal hump reduction, things like that. So it's really having that medical basis. And the second part is that it is in 3D versus 2D.
That's good for pre-op and post-op planning and patient education for sure. I think all of us have run into trouble using this kind of software because it gives the patient an image in their head of a result. And if you fall short of that result, of course, there have been lawsuits for that. And so a lot of surgeons are a little hesitant to use imaging software in their consultation process. Do you think that's a concern?
Rahul?
Yeah, I think it is a barrier for some surgeons, but I think that the growing trend that we see is that surgeons can gravitate towards that because it allows a recognition of what is the most natural or feasible. You're able to control that with the patient, and having an upfront conversation with the patient, at least in my practice, that look, this is a suggestion, and this is an ideal. It may not be what is the end result. And I think patients understand that quite well. And the other part of it is that, like David was saying, is that patients want to see what this looks like, and you also want to be able to morph with the patient as a surgeon to be able to say, okay, this, I feel comfortable being able to likely deliver this, or not. And lastly, it's being able to provide a natural result, and patients fear that. And having a data-driven based analysis that is able to say that, okay, for your facial features of your cheeks, your jaw, this is potentially a best fit nose, taking into account all of the other face. And that's where the AI really comes in handy, is to come up with that best fit.
Amazing.
I'll say two more. Can I Can I want to jump in and say two more things really quick.
Yes.
So one, it is probably true. I think it's there's a hardcore 30% of facial plastic surgeons and plastic surgeons who work on the face that really don't want to use morphing software for the reasons you describe. But research surveys show around 70% are using some kind of tool. The vast majority of them are working in 2D on photographs, whether it's with a specifically designed plastic surgery application or just working in something like Photoshop. Our goal has been to try to build something in 3D that makes it worth a large group of those people make the transition to working in 3D. And the other thing is, step one is working with surgeons, building credibility, building some reach. Step two is extending this so this can go into the hands of patients to work on their own, where the expectations of I can achieve this outcome at the very least aren't your problem in a certain
Interesting. I guess then you would have to train the software on the limitations of, like, well, how much bone can you take out of a hump and before you collapse or get a saddle nose, or how much chin projection can you get before it's unrealistic and someone wants to put Jay Leno's chin on their petite face. So you'd have to give a lot of software parameters. Is that something you're designing in the engineering of the AI?
we think about it, but and we tune the amount of range we offer to make sure that you can't get too unrealistic. On the other hand, we've actually really made an effort, at least with the surgery tool, with the tool that's designed for surgeons, not to take the surgeon and their expertise and the special knowledge they have of the patient out of the process. So, in a sense, it is the surgeon during that consultation who's saying, your bridge cannot be narrow in this. I wouldn't be comfortable taking your bridge narrow in this. You're going to have problems breathing, right? AI can do a lot. I actually am skeptical of the idea that any sort of beauty algorithm, no matter how well it works, is going to make it so the full plan will be done without the surgeon. I think you're all safe, frankly.
How are we incorporating features of ethnicities, diversity, and gender differentiation into the programming? Like, we've heard some criticisms of AI, the AI being taught by faces that are all the uploaded faces are all very homogenized or very Caucasian features. What are we doing to build the diversity and ethnicity into the AI software?
Sure. It depends how nerdy you want me to get. So I'll start really high level. The training data set is about slightly majority white, and the rest is a diversity of other ethnicities. It's actually sort of a pretty representative sample of diversity in the US and Canada when you look at the numbers. That's what we were able to get on our first pass with, and frankly, the funding we had, right? It's not the goal. The goal really has to be you want samples of equal size from every ethnicity so that there's nothing imbalanced in your predictions. And we will get there, is the thing I'll say. In the meantime, we've taken steps to make sure that it is not biased towards our majority white sample. And then I'll just give you one basic statistical way we've done that. My background is in 3D statistics, so I tend to move in that direction when I talk. Rather than use the whole sample when we're generating, let's say, average male and female faces and just taking an overall mean, we'll take a mean in each ethnicity and then we'll average those together. So in the end, you have one white male face, one white female face, one African American male face, one African American female face, et cetera, et cetera. And from that, you're building your global average. And in that way, you can sort of unweight the imbalance in your sample. It doesn't mean you have a perfect as good an estimate of the mean in the smaller sample populations, but you can take measures like that to be cautious, and we do.
But do I want to merge all those ethnicities into one facial type, or do I want to be able to take an African American patient and say, I only want to look at African American database for African American men, for example, or women? Like, I would think that I wouldn't want to merge an Asian nose with an African American with a Caucasian, because then I just get a homogenous feature that doesn't really suit that ethnicity. And maybe I'm gonna have to ask the patient, like, you are after you, do you identify as African American, or do you want a more Caucasian look? Like, which set of noses do you want to look at?
So, right, two parts to that. One, we're not that prescriptive, right? And so we have a set of very heavily statistically driven sliders. And then we have a whole bunch of refinement tools. So, and those refinement tools are just more geometric in their approach, wider or narrower of the bridge that you have, right? More volume in your cheeks, less volume in your cheeks, things like that. And so at that point, you really have enough control. And we've never had any reports of not being able to have control to create the morph you want to make within an ethnicity. The second part is actually a much more complicated question, is what are people's goals for their procedure? Do they want something that is truly ethnically centered? Do they want something that is family centered? Because, there's a feature, my family all has this chin, right? And I want a little less of this chin, but I want my family's chin. So we will figure these things out later. For now, we stay more general. And give, again, we put into the hands of the surgeon the ability to sort of titrate the amount of transformation also across a whole range of statistically driven sliders and precision control refinement sliders.
And how does the software compare to image analysis software that's already available on the market? You know, for example, many surgeons have Quantificare, or there's three or four brands out there where we can do three-dimensional facial analysis, looking at volumes, looking at contours and angles. How is this different? Rahul, maybe you have a good clinical standpoint.
Yeah, so I previously and still partially do use one of those as as part of our transition off of that. And what we do with the AI aspect of the software really allows it to be much faster, much smoother, and it's basically I'm able to create something that doesn't have little lumps and bumps in it like I used to get. So when I previously used to add volume to a cheek or change the jaw size, it was not within all of the spectrum of those other softwares. However, as David has mentioned, we've built those abilities into Deep Surface's algorithm. And particularly with facial feminization surgery and gender affirming work that I do, we've built a lot of that into this software because it encompasses many of the other facial plastics procedures that patients ask for. And it's able to create a very realistic appearing face in a very quick way. And that's the big differentiation factor for me in a busy practice, just trying to produce ideas for patients.
What's
And then
the
I'd add,
software that you're currently using? The other one,
I use Deep
competitor.
Surface and I used Vectra.
Vectra, yeah.
Canfield product. The
Canfield
other difference.
one. I think most people in aesthetics are pretty familiar with Canfield, but yeah, I think they all the softwares have some limitations, so it's just interesting to see how they do differentiate.
We also, I think a Quantificare camera is around $100,000. I think a Canfield camera is around $12,000. And you tend to be tied to a particular, with us, you just need a smartphone, usually a vintage 2021 or later, about. And we're also cloud-based, so it's portable for surgeons who have multiple clinics, for instance, or would want to do this in multiple rooms instead of in whatever room they're seeing a patient in, instead of having to move the patient into an imaging room, all that becomes possible as well.
In general, there's a lot of talk and flash about AI, but when you really look into the useful apps, they are limited. Which ones are you guys using that you think like change your daily flow of life, like you use them on the regular?
Sure. I mean, for me, it's ChatGPT at this
Yeah,
point.
for sure.
To the extent that it's really useful AI, the recommendation engines in music applications, I would say those are my two.
Right. And how about you, Rahul?
For me, ChatGPT, and I'm trying to incorporate it more and more, especially into things like marketing, email management, schedule management, et cetera. Just whatever I can do to make my life better. I've entertained kind of AI-based scribe and note creation, although I haven't gone there yet. But I am looking forward to potentially working with that. But that's the main area that I've gone in.
It's interesting because if you watch or if you're on social media, it sounds like the world is exploding with AI, and every day there's, 20 or 30 new applications. But really, there's probably like a core 10 that people actually dive deep into and use. And I think in medicine in particular, there are very few. They're like ChatGPT, yes, but in marketing and that side of things, yes. But I was shocked in researching artificial intelligence for facial aesthetics, like how little there is out there. I mean, there's scanning apps that look at, facial skin features like brown spots, pigmentation, rosacea. There's features that look at pore size and skin hydration, but wrinkles, but there's very little that looks at like architecture of the face, sagging. I mean, in my head, I'm imagining an AI that can scan my face, calculate where my volume losses are. Tell me how much fat or filler I need to transfer in there. Tell me how much skin to trim and tighten, what vector to pull. That's what I want to see in AI. So I need you guys
It's
to do that. We need to develop that.
what we need. What you need is the camera that can see below. The challenge is you're dealing with surface cameras trying to infer all the movements of different kinds of tissue under the face, which is it's always going to be prediction. It's never going to be individual. Maybe someday there'll be really good ways to link an excellent surface model of the face that's convincing 3D with CT scan or MRI based volumetric undersurface subsurface architecture. And then you'll really be talking.
Maybe we get a picture of the bony anatomy, where the typical muscles usually attach, and what the volumes look like.
That's right. At the
Something.
same time, with the data and an understanding of attractiveness and what defines attractiveness and average and the influence of averageness. With the data that we have and aim to collect, it is within the realm and an upcoming goal to be able to have such features to be able to give the most, attractive or beneficial ideas or configuration of the face. And so for, be able to change those with age, change that with weight, and be able to show what the face may look like, and even on ethnicity, on our previous discussion. I don't think we're too far away from that. It's definitely the goal. When 3 years ago, when we started doing this creation of this company and software, this was where we saw it going. And as we progress, it really becomes closer and closer to that. And we'll also incorporate those trends in culture and those trends in surgical abilities as we understand how patients, sorry, as surgeons want to morph faces into those that are most desirable. So all that data feeding back is able to really guide us quite a bit, not so that it's an automated answer just given to the surgeon, but it's what David calls a functional generative AI, where it's really providing you a parameter and guidance-based system to be able to educate yourself as a surgeon and the patient themselves.
Are you guys a privately held company? Is it the two of you starting on this amazing venture, or do you have funding, venture capital?
We're a private for-profit corporation. We've raised equity in the past, and we've also so I'm actually up in Canada, and there's a pretty robust non-dilutive grant system up here as well, aimed at helping small businesses get started. So we've benefited from that as well. And I mean, they say you're sort of always fundraising, so I don't want to say too much about it, but hopefully there'll be some interesting news about, to the extent it's news, hopefully there'll be some interesting news about that soon.
Interesting. And do you envision someday just being able to have an app or a product that you'll sell to surgeons as the consumer? The consumer will be the surgeon, or the consumer will be the patient?
I think it's both. And I think that it can become part of patient management. We're already licensing to surgeons. We have our first batch of surgeon licensees out there using the software. I would love to also get this into the hands of patients to use it themselves. It's going to be somewhat different, but they're the ones who want to be able to think about this. So the hurdle to get over there is a technology hurdle about being able to, without too much distortion, getting good 3D of a person's face off their phone when they're moving it around their face. It's one thing to do it with a QuantiFERE camera or a Camfield camera or with a physician's assistant or the surgeon doing the capture. It's another when the patient's collecting their own information.
Interesting. Slightly terrifying to think that we're going to create a generation of people who morphs their faces and brings you the image of what they think is going to happen when the operating room is not nearly that predictable. Like, depending on how people heal and tissue anatomy, and like, it's Instagram has created a generation of very unrealistic expectations of how surgery can give, like, I'm not a magician, I'm a
Anything.
surgeon. But I think that's definitely a factor to worry about.
Can I ask you a question on this? Do you think it will be easier to work with patients who come in with a transformation of their own face than with a picture of somebody else's face who they just sort of structurally look nothing like?
That's a great question, and I think it's there's difficulty on both sides. On the one hand, looking at their own self-morph picture will be able I'll be able to look at that photo and say, this is not realistic for your bone structure. I can't achieve that goal, and it's such a true rendition of who they want to be. So that's super helpful. On the other hand, sometimes it's nice to have the ambiguity of they're showing me the lips of five different girls that they like, or the cheekbones that they like. And I get a global sense of I can see the feature, the structure that they want, and apply that to their face. So I like the fact that that's not so pinpointed, because I understand they want the essence of that look, and I can call that into something I can deliver. Versus, I want this exact face is hard to deliver and not realistic. Yeah.
And then what if you could take the image that they generated, load it into your software, and say, let's work with what you did, and let's bring it back to things that I think are advisable, I think work with your structure, and I think are realistic.
I think someday you're right that that technology will be part of the consultation approach, but I also dread that a little bit, because I feel that very much of the artistry of what we do as plastic surgeons is art. And not every surgeon's going to have the ability to create art. Not everyone can retain your self-identity and still give you attractiveness without homogenizing you to the global equal of everyone your age whose face has been uploaded into the protocol. And so I think that that's so it's there's like a real ethical question of like, are we going to homogenize all faces to have robotic attractive features because every 50-year-old should have this amount of volume and this ratio and proportion? Am I going to take away individualism and self-identity and asymmetry and all the things that are quirky and beautiful about the face?
I definitely hear you on that. I definitely don't think that is, I think you in a sense would find the opposite experience with our software, which is that you have much more control to be subtle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not prescriptive that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But some, but having said that, some doctors we talk to, some very prominent surgeons that we talk to really want that because they do, you know, they're the surgeons who do about the same thing every time and they use morphing. And why do they need to spend 10 minutes making a morph that's in their mind, basically the same morph that they made? Mm-hmm. So that's actually a space for people who are interested in that. That's a space where AI can be helpful. But I think the typical surgeon engaging with our software appreciates the ability to be subtle, to not have to just be sort of forced into somebody's beauty ideal.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing, sorry, Rahul, I was just going to say that the machine learning of the face is going to be fascinating to see, to have a machine learn a million faces at age 50, what happens that is different than what was happening at age 40 is going to really teach us how gravity and sagging and ligaments change in a way that we've only been able to imagine and, you know, create the theory behind it. So the machine learning will be fascinating, same way machine learning has showed us that the computer can tell based on the retinal appearance, if you're a woman or a man, like something a human eye could never discern, the machine has learned from a million eyes it's looked at, right? So I think that aspect of diagnosing what changes with age is going to be fascinating.
I actually think that in regards to homogeny, I think that, you know, with understanding faces in three dimension and understanding that there's 55,000 roughly points that go into the 3D images that we have to work with, we actually kind of get away from homogeny because we're not dealing anymore with the more simplistic approaches to proportions and measurements. We're in a much more sophisticated and detailed analysis. And that actually takes us further and further away from homogeny. So I think the direction that AI and increased data, which is really what it is going to actually be able to drive us in a way of increasing individuality rather than the other way. And now the other thing, I really think that when it comes to morphing and patients coming in with morphing and having expectations, that becomes a really challenging question, and one that deserves a lot of conversation between surgeon and patient. But we know that when patients are dissatisfied, a lot of times it can be one of the big reasons of just a communication loss of what the expected result was. And when that mismatch is present from the beginning, you have a collision course at work, and neither party knows it until things are done and healed, and it doesn't go very well. I find that whenever I use morphing, I have a really good idea of what the patient wants. They have an idea that they've been able to communicate that. And yes, it depends on certain skill level and just how the operation goes and whether that result can be obtained. But when it is, you know that everything has merged, the patient desire, the patient, this surgeon's output, and what the morph had said. And that's, it's going to be tough, but I think it's also going to change the way we approach surgery. It's going to change how we critique our own work. It's going to change how we develop procedures and the future of procedural development. And I think it'll push us to the next level.
Well, this has been such an interesting discussion. I can't wait to try deep surface AI. Hopefully you guys will license me some and I'll try it and give everyone some feedback on it. And love to invite you to lecture too at the American Academy meeting that's coming up in October of 2024. We're going to do a panel on AI. So it'd be really fascinating to chat further on that. Where can everyone find you guys on social media or your company sites?
You can find us at deepsurfaceai.com on the internet, and that's a good place to start. And you will find links there, I believe, to our Instagram and to our LinkedIn and things like that.
Yeah, quite simply, we are just on Instagram. Our handle is Deep Surface AI, and my handle is Rahul Seth MD.
Wonderful. All right. Well, you guys are brilliant. Thank you for your time today. And I hope to check this out further. I'm going to keep our audience updated on all the AI things that are coming into aesthetics and both marketing, but also just the evaluation of beauty and aging and how it's going to change our practices in the next 5 to 10 years. Things are going to evolve very quickly. So it's such an exciting time. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our amazing skincare and our online course for injectors, modern aesthetic theory, and artistry. Learn all these amazing off-label techniques with me. Thanks so much, guys. Stay
Thank you
beautiful.
very much. Thanks, everyone.
Yay.
Thanks for having us.